Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
Welcome to the Hollywood Casino Press Box with your host, Frank Cusimano.
Here's the pitch. Lined there, that is! Into left field! It's number 3,000! A run is scored! Musial around first! On his way to second with a double!
The best interviews and the most informed insight.
And that's McGaffey breaking free, has a seam and a crease. The kicker can't trip him up. Headed for the end zone. Will it be back-to-back weeks? Yes!
All tied together with the experience of over 20 years of local broadcasting excellence in St. Louis.
Now Stasny gets away from a check to Fabry. Wide open. Brower. Rebound. He scores. Trey Brower. The former Blackhawk has given the Blues a 3-2 lead.
Now, here is Frank Cusimano on 590 The Fan and 590thefan.com.
Good morning and welcome. Hollywood Casino Press Box on the all-new 590 The Fan. Good program lined up for you today. Barry Odom's going to join us for a couple of minutes at 10:30. At 11:20, we're going to talk with David Jacober, the son of Ron Jacober, who's battling cancer but has gotten a lot of strength from watching the St. Louis Blues. At 11 o'clock, Curtis Francois from Worldwide Technology Raceway. They sponsor our opening monologue. And for the first hour of the program, we have a lot of Jayhawks in one room. In fact, this has got to be setting some type of record. BJ Raines is over here in the corner. We have Alvin Reed, and we have Rob Raines. Men, good to be with you. How are you?
Good, great, great, man. Thanks. How you been?
We figured since Gary Woodland won it, we should get some Jayhawks in here. That really
you need a
was.
Flag. You need a flag in the studio, though, Frank. Right. I don't see any.
Can you imagine the hate mail we're going to be receiving on the text lines right now?
Can you imagine people texting you? Just letting you know that your U.S. Open champion is the Jayhawk.
They were singing the Rock Chalk chant at the 18th green,
I know.
Right?
Yeah.
One likable Jayhawk, an interesting trip to his golf fame, basketball player at Washburn.
Yeah, played against KU before he transferred to KU to play golf.
Hmm.
Yeah, and going back, like on weekends for, I do a golf tournament, you know, either with alumni or black alumni, that at some point on homecoming weekend, and I'd met him one time, and he was a pro golfer, and he had won, I think at that time, maybe two of his tournaments, because he had three wins before the Masters win. The Masters, listen to me, U.S. Open win. Very cordial guy, but he's a Jayhawk. Seriously, he's a Jayhawk.
Another Jayhawk just texted me, Ryan Robertson, asking, why wasn't I invited today?
There's still time. Get in charge.
Right.
It is kind of interesting, though, that the NCAA is about to name six schools, two of them supposed to be prominent. Most people are speculating that it's going to be Arizona and Kansas. Reaction to that, gentlemen?
I'll believe it when I see it. I mean, I think we just have heard so many rumors and so many, you know, allegations of different stuff that, you know, who knows what's true.
I do know that they have on one of the FBI tapes, which they really can't use as evidence, but you can possibly use as background, is it Townsend, the Kansas
Curtis
assistant?
Townsend.
Yeah.
Right.
Asking this question, what do we have to do to get Zion here?
Yeah. And because obviously we follow this, you know, months ago when I was first started, you know, on Tuna's show, I told the world, like, the kid they're talking about is Zion Williamson, and that is a call between the now, you know, prison-bound Gasola and you know, assistant coach, and there's some other texts that are incriminating. Look, my problem with it all is kind of like what has gone on campus. I thought the chancellor or others should have been a little bit more involved in it. However, I'm not seeing anything, technically, that you could say you need to be suspended, put on probation, any of that. And so I'm like, Rob, I'll believe it when I see it. They'll maybe get a letter of explain yourself, because quite frankly, I don't think Curtis Townsend has had to explain himself to anybody. And the fact that they want to ask, so what is this all about? I think that's fair. I do think that's fair. Whether it goes any farther than that, I doubt it.
Well, many times it's interesting that being named, like I think they're going to be named and it's going to be a big story, is actually worse than the penalty. I mean, let's face it, North Carolina was named, and what did they get? Slap on the wrist.
Well,
nothing.
But Arizona was named long time ago, and that tape with Miller on it and all that, and they've had two of the best recruiting classes in the last 2 years. And this was not bad either. So it's not like people say, oh, just don't go anywhere near there. I don't want to be put in that, you know, category, because I really don't think we have done anything to the level of non-participation in the tournament or anything like that.
You would also think that if anybody has any insight how though this is going to unfold, it's Bill Self. And Bill Self is also a guy who probably could have gotten the NBA job this summer. In fact, a lot of summers. And if he thought it was going to be really bad, then take off now.
Yeah, that's one thing I look at, too. And, I think there's always going to be, if they want to make an example of somebody, there's going to be a scapegoat somewhere. It could be one of the assistant coaches. It could be somebody inside the, you know, athletic office that handled the paperwork or whatever. I mean, you know, there's some ways that they can, you know, look, we disciplined this guy or did that and, you know, move on. So something like that will happen.
I like probably the way it's painted, too, that it's going to be two prominent schools. So, like, I mean, like if Auburn's one of them, hey, we made it. We're a blue blood. I mean, is that considered a prominent basketball school?
Yes, because LSU could also be in
there,
too.
Well, how about that, too? What if they named LSU but not Auburn? They named Auburn, not LSU. Imagine how...
Well, you know, that's point and figures. But at the same time, all right, who should really go down on all this? And it's kind of like, all right, you got Arizona. Wow. You know, you got a guy testifying to what all went on and tapes and all that. Then LSU... There's no, what? He wasn't talking about giving money to people? Of course he was.
Yeah. How do you think kids go to schools like LSU without that happening anyway?
Right. Yeah, that's a great point.
So, maybe KU is one of those six, that top six, top two. I don't know. But I do know that whatever has gone down so far does not bring itself to, playing in the tournament. And if you suspended a scholarship, by the way, Kansas has one scholarship left, and they're, like, not doing anything with it. So if the NCAA said, you're suspended one scholarship, you know, I think we could survive that.
We'll see. All right, let's talk a little baseball. Rob, you were at the game yesterday. I saw you at the ballpark.
Yes.
You know what really strikes me about this Cardinal team? And it seems... I don't know how to phrase this, but they just don't get enough base hits. Let me just put it that way. They do not get enough hits. They got 100 total hits in the last 15 games. That's like 6.5 a game, and they have four or fewer in six of them. They don't get hits.
And shut out twice by the Marlins in the last week, by the same guy.
Same guy.
Jordan Yamamoto.
Yeah.
Yes. So it's frustrating. I mean, I think, you know, we were just talking before we came off the air. I mean, the problem is, I don't know that I hadn't had this conversation with anybody, but to me, I mean, the biggest problem with it is, what do you change? I mean, you're counting on Matt Carpenter, you're counting on Paul DeJong, you're counting on Paul Goldschmidt, you're counting on Marcelo Zuna, you're counting on Yadier Molina. You're not going to change any of those guys. You might, adapt the order a little bit, try to do something different as far as, you know, put DeJong bat in leadoff, or, I mean, Ozuna bat in second, I mean, or something to kind of shake it up a little bit, but it's going to be the same guys. So if they don't do it, you're just kind of stuck, in my mind.
I agree. And, you know, we've talked before, the three of us on different shows, it seems like we have this conversation a lot. Okay, the idea of stringing together base hits seems remote to the Cardinals. They have a problem with that. They either score big and quite frankly, you know, they got shut out yesterday, but which was obviously Tuesday. Monday, that comical show that the Marlins put on out there was kind of like, you know, God bless you that you won that game. But, I mean, nobody should come into this locker room saying, like, yeah, 5-9, we dominated.
Yeah.
First, they stung. And in reality, how many hits did the Cardinals actually get in that game? You know, that was
eight, I think, but that was a couple more gifts. Yeah.
Yeah, gifts, total gifts and non-hustle and things like that by the Marlins. And then you're like, well, okay, that game is a little sketchy. But a win's a win's a win. I get that. But you gotta get more base hits. You cannot strike out that much. I mean, you simply – well – let me rephrase that. You can strike out that much because people used to strike out a lot, won the world championship, you know, just all that. But this lineup, like you were saying, and these guys, people got to get on base a little bit more often than that.
Rob, I don't know what you wrote when Carpenter got the $39 million extension, but I think a lot of people are saying, did they really have to do that? And I'm also thinking, too, that can you really make the postseason if, you know, he's a 230 hitter and his OPS is like 150 points off his normal OPS.
Not batting leadoff.
Yeah.
I mean, the black hole. I mean, I did a thing last week about the kind of, if everybody's been paying attention to the Blues and haven't paid attention to the Cardinals the last 2 months, you know, here's some things to know. And one of them is the leadoff spot has just been a total black hole. I mean, they pulled him out of there for a little bit and tried another couple other guys, and, you know, Wong was like 1 for 16, and just, you know, Fowler was like 2 for 23 or something,
I'm sorry, I didn't mean it right.
No, I mean, I'm just saying, I mean, that's been the biggest problem is they've got to get, you know, people look at Goldschmidt and they say he hasn't done a whole lot. Well, he hadn't had a whole lot of chances. You know, so I don't know. They're going to be interesting. So,
yeah, it's like if you take Fowler's numbers without that little brief time he was batting leadoff, they're still. I mean, he's having a decent season, but he's having a decent. That dragged him down. Like say, he went into that slot and just went into a woeful slump.
Well, they got sick too. Remember, he was doing pretty well, and then he missed about 4 or 5 days when he got sick. So that kind of didn't.
Power numbers are okay. Pretty solid, actually.
Right. But his average sank when he went. He still had a pretty decent batting average.
But here again, say this. All the things we're talking about, and we're going to get into the starting pitching, all that kind of stuff, I'm sure, we're still less than 3 games out of first place.
No, that's what I was going to say.
So how the heck is that happening?
Right.
Okay, Mike Schilt's got to play the hand he's been dealt.
That's what I think,
but would you distribute it differently? Would you think about playing Jose all the time in right and platoon Fowler and Bader in center? How would you work it?
I would not start him in right. I think that's just...
You'd make him strictly a ninth inning hitter, huh?
I would try to play him more.
Well, where would you play him?
I mean, I he can have some days where he plays, you know, right field, but I'm not. He's not going to be.
Don't you want him to get 3 at bats every night?
I don't want him to play. I don't want him to play defense. The ball finds you, Frank. That ball will find you, and it'll find him at the most inopportune time.
And I also think this: if you're struggling offensively, then how can you win games? You win games with pitching and defense. And base running. So, I mean, and the defense has been much better this year. I mean, I know they coughed, you know, was going to cough one up last night, but, you know, and the base running has certainly been a lot better. So, I mean, they're doing some of the little things right, and I think that's really part of the reason why they've kind of hung in here without playing really well overall.
One positive, Paul DeJong. I've said this a few times, want to see what you think. Do you think before it's all said and done, maybe 5 years from now, we'll be saying he's the best shortstop the Cardinals have had, not named Ozzie Smith, post-World War II?
No.
You like Renteria?
You said,
I'm talking overall.
You said however many years from now.
Yeah, 5 years from now.
Nah, no.
You don't think you will be saying
no,
that?
No, because I don't think he's...
If he's a 30-home-run hitting shortstop with really solid defensive skills...
Okay. I'm not saying that this is going to happen or I don't like him. I don't think he is
that. Who is right now?
I don't think he is that good.
Who's number two right now in your mind after Ozzie, post-World War II?
All right, you mentioned Renteria. Who was here for sure?
You know, you got Templeton, you got Maxfield, you got Dick Groat, you got Marty Marion, technically. But
I'm going to say, who are we missing here?
Johnny Peralta, who had some good home run seasons.
Good home run seasons.
Just in terms of longevity, he probably would be.
Yeah.
You know, and performance-wise. Again, it's so hard in baseball the way it is now, though, to compare players from different eras, you know, because it's just offensive numbers are skewed, you know, and you can't play, nobody's gonna play defense the way Ozzie did. So even as good as, you know, DeJong was going to be as a shortstop, you know, it's still not a probably
right. And staying in contention category. All right, I think staying in contention has kept people on the Cardinals roster for since Tony La Russa got here. Okay, they never really fall off the face of the earth. Paul DeJong will get traded if the Cardinals decided right now that we're going to lose, 20 of our next 25 games. Who would everybody be looking for? That'd be the first guy. Contract control, you know, even though he got an extension, all right, but it's not a bad contract. You know, there would be a lot of teams that would want him, let alone just, you know, take him. But that's fantasy land. But I'm just saying that before we... You know,
well, what guy in the starting eight is exceeding expectations? DeJong, maybe Ozuna. That's it.
If you're basing your expectations on what he did last year,
what you kind of thought he was going to do.
He's better. He's been better than I thought.
Yeah, and Ozuna would be the only other one.
Right. Correct. And now, if you told me Ozuna was doing what he was supposed to do when he got here, then he's not exceeding expectations.
But after what we saw last year, he's better.
Oh, much better. He's much better than I thought he would be this year. I thought we had a real problem when the season opened.
I didn't answer your question about Carpenter's extension. I was surprised by the timing of that. I could see why they went ahead and picked up the option for next year, but I didn't think they had to go beyond that. It surprised me that they did that.
And who is the second-best shortstop after Ozzie?
I mean, it's either Renteria or DeJong. I mean, I think you based on the, you look at the All-Star games, you look at, you know, the overall numbers. I mean, I think, and then the fact that they may have played at least 4 or 5 years at that spot.
Speaking of the All-Star game, who's our representative? John Gant, Paul DeJong, who is it?
Paul DeJong. I think you can find a way to put him on there. I'm not one of those crazy voters that votes five times a day, every day, but I've voted a couple times. And when you're going down, you know, if you, it's like, all right, who is having your best season? Who should start, you know, whatever? And then who should be a representative? I think Paul DeJong should be the Cardinals representative if it comes down to that.
Make a case for Ozuna, too.
I know.
There is a lot. There's probably less competition at shortstop than there is in the outfield.
Right.
I wouldn't be surprised if they put Jordan Hicks on there.
Okay.
That's a good thought.
That's a good thought.
Do you think Gant, I know middle relievers don't go, but he may be their MVP.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
It you know, it all depends on what you want to see in the All-Star game. You know, I mean, it you want to see the guys that people tune in to maybe pay attention to the game, even though the ratings won't be very good. You know, if that's the case, would you rather have Jordan Hicks or John Gant?
Yeah, I hear you. Some guy throwing 110 miles an hour.
Yeah,
I think
he needs to be there. That's a good point,
right? Right. And if you're going to play a game and not have a disaster, if it were to go longer than 9 innings and things like that, and you're putting together the team, I think that works in DeJong's favor because he's a good player who can play, you know, at the end of the game. But if the game kept going and people are out and catching flights out of, you know, town and all that, he could play. And I think they need at least a couple of guys that not only can play but want to play.
All right, how about the importance of the hitting coach? I asked Brian last week to give me the strikeout totals and the OPS, and they're like exactly the same. Mm-hmm. And this lineup, by the way, has a healthy Fowler, a better Ozuna, and a franchise first baseman. But last year, we wanted to blame, you know, world hunger and every other problem in the world on John Mabry. Is the hitting coach have any role here, or is just Albert not great, or what do you think?
To me, he has an influence on the younger players. I don't think he's going to change Matt Carpenter. I don't think, even though he's got a history of working with Carpenter, so I think they have a good relationship, and I think he does, you know, work with him. But, I mean, the guys that have been proven and had success at the big league level, the coaches are there to kind of be an extension of them and say, hey, did you try this? Or, hey, I saw that you were doing this differently or whatever. But as far as to me that you're going to measure Jeff Albert's success with what happens with Harrison Bader, what happens with a hitter like DeJong, what happens with – you know, Colton Wong. What happens with the, you know, some of the other kids coming up through the system? Though that's the guys that I'm looking to him to see what kind of influence he has.
You know, I don't know. I think it's more personal relationship than it is actual X's and O's. You know, they tell you, like, the first time in Little League, you know, they said, like, hey, this is your first at bat, and you grab a bat and you go up there, and technically that is your batting stance, that is your batting style. It'll be refined, but however you did it the first time is probably how you should do it. If a player has a great year, I'm a great hitting coach. If they all have terrible years, I'm a terrible hitting coach. That really doesn't make any sense. So I think that over the years, there's been an overemphasis on what your hitting coach does. I don't think your hitting coach can make you a great hitter.
I think he makes you aware of the opposing pitcher.
Yeah.
You know, like he does, his tendencies are to do this or this. When the count falls behind the count, he's going to do this. Just kind of helps you support your knowledge. I did a piece last year on who coached the coaches, and I asked Willie McGee one of the questions about, you know, the most influential coaches that he had had. And speaking to your point, he said he still remembers, like, you know, the first time he batted in a Little League game, he looks down at the third base coach and he goes, "Don't look at me. I can't help you now. You're on your own." You
know? So, yeah. Interesting. Well, you brought up Colton Wong there for a second. Yeah. Another thing from last year was everybody wanted to blame Mike Matheny for Colton Wong. Well, here we are. His batting average is 13 points lower. His slugging is about the same. He's the exact same offensive player. So what do you see here? Is that you are who you are in life, and he is about a 240 hitter. He's got a little bit more home runs this year, but what do you think?
I think that he's the kind of guy that if the rest of the offense is going well and doing what they should do, we don't really worry about Colton Wong's offense because he can bat seventh or eighth, play gold-glove caliber defense, and that should be enough to help you win.
I think he fell into the trap that Colton Wong was the most valuable player in the National League 20 days into the season. And I think you start to believe that, you know,
I'm that
player. And all the time, you're like, well, you shouldn't be telling yourself you're not that player. But at the same time, man, the ball seems to be finding your bat. And I, you know, that's why I'm sitting here, because I always acknowledge that. You know, I'd go 4-for-5 in a game and think, like, I doubt I go 4-for-5 next game. Now, that's probably why I'm not out there playing baseball still. But that, and I'm 58 years old, I guess. You'd be right about
I'd be right about you.
We will take a short time out. We want to get into the Cardinal pitching situation shortly, too. And I also want to ask Alvin about the Blues run. Was it inclusive enough? I want to get your take on that. This is the Hollywood Casino Press Box. We'll be right back.